The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago. Mike Tsai with the one and only Jamal Mayers. Coming up in just a bit, Dylan Sakura will join me. We'll get the latest on the young winger and how he looks to progress and get things going in his rookie campaign. We're coming to you from the 11th annual Blackhawks Convention. Jammer, always a great time to kind of see, you know what, the summer's winding down. Pucks is not far away, but all eyes on Friday were on Corey Crawford and the news that, you know, he says he's not 100%.
I'm feeling pretty good right now. I'm not at 100% yet, but we've come a long way in the last couple of months, and I worked really hard to do whatever I can to get better, and I'm excited to be here right now and see all the guys and get that feeling of being back in it. And you know, it's nice to see Krug's face too again. And I'm just excited to be here. And you know, it's we still have a lot of time before training camp, so we're very very excited about it.
A little bit of a conflicting report from, you know, the tone and the posturing we saw from what management said all along, that yeah, he's fine, things are progressing, he'll be ready to go. Your thoughts just seeing Corey and the news on Friday?
Well, we heard it from the horse's mouth. He's not 100%. He's hoping he continues to progress. I think there is a little bit of positive, the fact that he's here. He could be sitting in a dark room at home and not being around anybody, lights and sounds and everything else going on in the world. But he is here, so I think he has progressed, but not to the point where he feels 100% enough to compete. I think it's concerning because as you approach August, as we are, as a player, you're gearing up. You're getting on the ice three or four times a week. You're starting to think about training camp, which is just around the corner. And those last 2 weeks, you're refining your workouts and kind of scaling back in the gym and more on the ice as you prepare for training camp. And everyone goes through that process, whether you're a player or a goaltender. So for him not to have seen a puck or touched a puck or been on the ice is concerning. And the fact that he's stating that he's not 100% is concerning. But there is positive in the fact that they do have a guy like Cam Ward, who has been a number one his entire career, maybe has digressed in the fact that he's 34 and taken a step back. Can he hold the gap for in a couple months until Corey gets to be 100%? Yes. Can he hold the whole season? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the to-do list for Stan Bowman this offseason, I had top four defensemen. I had, you know, some help maybe down the middle, forwards, you know, maybe adding some grit. They did some of that, but, you know, backup goalie was certainly on the docket, and you upgraded with Cam Ward there, no question about it. But if Corey is not ready to go, and he is going to be a big question mark this year, you know, that is something I think you would see them start the year with Cam, see how things progress. Maybe you see Forsberg as his backup. But then you would begin to see them kick the tires around the league. And we do know they do have some cap space. You know, the byproduct of the dealing Hossa and his contract to Arizona, and unfortunately Vinny Hinostroza, was relieving yourself of some cap burden. And now maybe beyond looking for a top 4D, they'll also be looking, if Cam can't quite carry the mail, finding someone who could.
Well, obviously, I'm not in management, but for me, I think you go out and you get a veteran goaltender. Somebody who's sitting out there, it's almost August. He's got his wife saying, hey, what are we doing next year? He's like, I have no idea. Might take a little bit less just to have a job.
Sure.
So there's Lettinen out there. Maybe didn't have a fantastic year, kind of fell off the last 2 years. There's guys like him sitting out there that don't have jobs that would gladly take a job and At the worst, the best case scenario is Corey's healthy and Cam Ward's his backup. But maybe you bring in a veteran guy who you can actually put him in the minors if need be for a salary of $750,800. Does it really hurt you when you have the room?
No, and it's smart for that player as well, because look, they know that the Hawks would not be picking up the phone and calling them if there wasn't concern about Corey, and they know that it's been a long period of time. So the opportunity here to showcase your talents and then maybe get that big payday, you know, the following year if you were the one that kind of, you know, kept the ship afloat.
And what's wrong with putting some pressure on Forsberg?
Sure. No,
put some pressure on him to play better. Don't just hand him the job. You got to push these young guys. I understand it's a young league, and you've got a lot of cases you've got to rely on them, which every team does increasingly more the last 5 years in particular, to get them to, you know, kind of like expedite their progression. But there's nothing wrong with lighting a fire underneath them and having someone who can push them and steal their job.
So as we get this convention underway, it's interesting to see the young guys that are, you know, looking to take that next step. And you can see just the way they carry themselves. Like, and Alex DeBrincat, while the way he walks down the catwalk this year was different than what we saw a year ago. You know, it's like, you know, you're in the NHL now. You know, he led the team in goals last year. You see a little bit from Schmaltz. Now they're the guys that are underneath them, the Sakuras and, you know, Hayden to a degree, and some of, you know, Edsel, who are trying to, you know, make that step from Rockford to, and, you know, in the case of Sakura, from Northeastern to the NHL and solidify their role. So it's kind of interesting to watch that dynamic. You're backstage with them. Do you pick that up just by body language?
I'm like, how young are these guys?
Know,
that's
crazy,
what I'm looking at.
It?
Baby faces and how old I must look to them. And they're like, look at that grizzly old guy. And, I'll tell you what, it's really fun to watch, because at some point I was them.
Yeah.
And you look for, you know, which guys, how they carry themselves, and the guys that are confident, it typically translates onto the ice. And you know what? It's exciting for the organization to have this many young guys stepping up and taking and assuming roles. And really, at the end of the day, the way the game is played now, you need those guys to step up. And so the challenge is like, when they come into a dressing room with three Stanley Cup, you know, guys have won three Stanley Cups. Two things that need to happen. The older players, those core players, need to embrace them.
Yes.
And encourage and help and foster.
Amen.
And help them grow and become players, because they need them,
yep.
Number one. And number two, they have to feel like they're important and not just continue to defer and expect, oh, Taser's got to do it, Kaner's got to do it. No. You have to do it. So I think that takes some time, but I think a lot of that, for me, falls on not only the coaching staff, but more of that core of players demanding it out of them and requesting them and encouraging them and bringing that out of those young players, because you're going to need DeBrincat and Schmaltz to be huge parts of this team going forward for them to take that next step.
You know, and I think that's a tremendous point, and that was your role to a degree in 2013, you know. And it's easier when that veteran, when their game is where they want it to be. It's harder when their game is not. So like in Taves and Dunks, instance, you know, they're struggling on the ice, so they probably feel a little more reluctant walking up. And but you know what?
That's,
you got
to
check that at the door.
That's what leaders have to do.
Yeah, you do. And maybe it's something like Chris Kunitz. That's the breath of fresh air from this offseason, that he might be that type of guy to, you know, meld the group.
First of all, four Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
Four. Enough one
said.
More than you guys.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
He wins the ring more.
He's got one more than they do.
Yeah.
So he has voice. He also is super competitive. Now, toughness comes in all sorts of ways. He is an unbelievably tough player. He does not back down from anybody. You could stare him in the eye. You can battle up against him. He's not going to fight you, but he is mean. He is hard to play against, and he can be that guy like Shaw was, to be the pulse and drag the rest of the team into the fight when they don't want to play. And he has a good sense. He's 30, almost 39 years old. He's got a pulse and understanding of what's going on, what's happening. And I think that when you're authentic and when you're honest, which I believe that he is, that's where his leadership skills are going to come out. They're hugely important. They've been missing from this group. He is a huge part of what's going to happen next year and how they're going to turn this around.
How was the summer? Did you have a good time with the fam?
Oh, enjoying it. Loving it. Training the girls.
Are you?
In the side yard, yeah.
How's the soccer careers going? Everything
It's been fun. I got some videos I can share with you. I will not. I don't post those. You know, okay. Some people post their kids doing that. I'm not going to do that.
By the way, I think Ovechkin just put the cup down for the first time. have you ever – look, you know you're one of the few that has been able to – you've got your name etched on that beautiful chalice, and you're able to spend time with it. Did you – I thought it was fantastic. First of all, I was happy to see him win, but – I thought he had it for like a month and a half. Like every time he's
did
like,
he let his run. Teammates touch it?
I don't know. I don't think so.
He's like, this is mine.
This is it.
He reverted back to the old Ovechkin from like his first years where he was like, selfish,
all
me.
All about me, yeah. Yeah, took it to the club, made it rain.
But I'll tell you what, though. It was nice to see him enjoy it. And we did a lot of those same things. Maybe not showered with it and did snow angels in a public fountain. But if we did, they weren't on camera.
Like, right.
But we did do silly things.
We look forward to seeing you all convention long. We'll be here at the Hilton Chicago. Coming up next on the Hawks Talk podcast, I sit down with Dylan Sakura as he gets ready for his rookie campaign after playing just 5 games last year with the Blackhawks.
So take us back to your senior year at Northeastern. The decision to sign with the Blackhawks, was that a difficult one? And how did you ultimately decide that, you know what, Chicago is the right place for me?
Yeah, I think after my junior year, I know it was kind of tough to say no to the Blackhawks, but I think it was kind of in my best interest to go back and get another year under my belt, and kind of had a couple goals going back into my senior year, which was obviously to win the Beanpot, which we did, and to go to the Hockey East tournament, and then obviously to end up going to the tournament. So I think we kind of accomplished all those goals, and I think I matured kind of on and off the ice and really helped me. And then when it came down to decision time, it was pretty easy to sign in Chicago.
What about the emotions that final week? You're in the tournament. You know you're trying to survive in advance. You're with these guys that you've been to war with for several years, great bond, and you lose to Michigan. Contracts are on their way. You're talking to your agent. Next thing you know, you're on your way to Chicago. I mean, what was the emotion like over that, like, say, 2-3 day period?
Yeah, it was pretty tough. I know with the whole Chicago thing, I kind of try to keep that in the background, especially during the tournament time, and try not to think about it too much. But you know, once that game was over, I remember I talked to my agent, and it was kind of business from there. And fortunately, I had two other guys on the team that were kind of going through the same thing, so kind of used each other, and we were able to talk about that. And but I think, yeah, when I first got here, it was pretty surreal, and you kind of forgot about what just happened literally the last day. And, you know, obviously the couple of weeks I spent in Chicago were amazing.
Your first NHL game happens to be Seabrook's 1,000th, and then I've been doing this for a long time, and it was a rough year last year. There weren't a lot of bright spots, but one of the brightest was this accountant from the suburbs, Scott Foster, who ends up being the emergency goaltender, goes in there, stones Winnipeg, you know, a team that was one of the top in the Western Conference. The United Center faithful are chanting his name. You're sitting on the bench during this whole thing. Were you like, what is – this is like the bizarro world.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I think everyone kind of remembers their first game, but I think that one will be a little bit different for me. But yeah, obviously it started off with this whole ceremony for Seabrook, which I thought was pretty special to be a part of. And I even know it was Sharpie's last home game too. And then, you know, when the first goalie went down before warm-ups, the other guy had to go in, and when he cramped up a little, obviously with Scott Foster came in, it was pretty cool. And I think we played a little bit harder defense there in the last 14 minutes, but I think he made a couple of good saves, and hopefully that'll be something I'll stick with him forever.
Small sample size, it was just 5 games. You end up getting 3 assists. What did that experience, what did it teach you about this league, and were you able to take anything from it to kind of catapult you into your training this summer?
Yeah, it was huge. Obviously, with the first game, getting that out of the way, and then obviously you're on the plane the next night, so the travel and just little things like that are definitely different. And, you know, obviously, I think a big thing for me is just being able to meet the guys and be comfortable with the guys. And, you know, going into main camp now, it's, I don't have to worry about the meet and greets. It's just kind of playing hockey. And, you know, obviously, you kind of see how good everyone is, and you kind of match up your play towards other people. And I think that's something I took in this summer, just to realize, you know, how good everyone really is out there. And you kind of up the intensity of your summer training and on ice.
You come in at an interesting time for this franchise, because, like, in years past, off of cup runs, there might have been one or two positions that they were looking to a younger guy to fill. now it's a lot of young guys that are coming together. And one thing Kane has said, and Jonathan has echoed the sentiment, is it's no longer cup winning guys and the young guys. Like, we need to come together as a team. You know, if you talk to guys like DeBrinket or Schmaltzy about, you know, this team and kind of how they come together and their identity, not being this, the guys that have rings and then the newcomers. Has there been discussion like that?
Yeah, I think with Chicago's a little bit different than most teams, because how strong the core is, and obviously with Seabrook, Keith, Taser, Kane, and Crawford, like the core guys that won the cups, they'll be here. And I think other teams don't really have that, but I think just the way the NHL is nowadays, it's so fast, and so many teams are going the young style. And I think even looking around the league, I don't think Chicago's as young as even some of the other teams. But yeah, definitely, I think coming together like that, and I know Taser will do a good job of kind of bringing the guys together this year.
Your brother Tyler was with Rockford last year. You guys have been training together in Toronto suburbs. Have you guys talked a little bit about what it might be like to be on the ice together with that Indian head sweater on?
Definitely. I think our parents talk about it more than we do, but you know, it's definitely something that we've dreamed of as kids, even just playing in the NHL, let alone being a part of the same team. So I think it's something that we're both going to work towards. I know that it's something that he's been working towards this year, and you know, he's went through a lot of adversity over the last couple of years, and to see where he is now, it's pretty special. And you know, hopefully I can stay up there, and hopefully he can meet me up there.
One thing you'll find out with this franchise is a lot of the big names have an affinity to horse racing. Joel Quenneville, Dennis Savard, Eddie Olczyk. I understand Quenneville is friends or friendly with your uncle. What has your uncle said about Q, and what do you know about their relationship?
Yeah, so we, me and my brother, we grew up obviously on the horse farm, and my dad and my uncle both breed, race, and sell horses. And my uncle's out in Kentucky now, and I know him and Joel have, I think, been in on maybe on a couple horses. He helps them out every now and then, and I think there's a picture of me and my brother with Joel. I think someone showed it, but we were about like 7 and 10 probably, and we have a picture with him. So it's pretty funny how it kind of comes full circle there. But you know, obviously he has nothing bad to say about Joel. He's an awesome guy and an awesome coach.
Are you looking forward to a top nine role here? I mean, is that something that you know, that you've been thinking a lot about this summer, and just, you know, how your NHL career is going to take off?
Yeah, definitely. I think you know, just the way I play, that's kind of role I have to be in. And I think just, yeah, going into this summer, you just kind of realize that, you know, you got to be a guy that's going to be able to contribute. And I think something that I've kind of worked on over the years is being a 200-foot guy. And, you know, at the next level, you got to realize that everyone's good in both ends. And that's something I got to continue to work on.
Dylan, best of luck to you. It's going to be fun watching.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Dylan Sakura for joining us this week on the Hawks Talk Podcast. Our thanks, as always, to Jamal Mayers as well. Thank you for listening. Hope to see you at the Hawks Convention this weekend. That'll do it for us. Thank you for listening to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevy dealers. I'm Pat Boyle. Take care.